Good morning. It's not just an honor, but it's a real personal pleasure for me to be here this morning with the members of the RA. I look around this room and I see a lot of friends I didn't have 4 years ago. People I don't just know, but feel close to and have come to care about deeply. And that friendship has grown because of our working together. Day by day, I know that the hours I put in are no longer than the hours you put in, and we're putting them in because we care about Judaism and the Jewish people, and we care about them in the form that we've come to love, called conservative Judaism. I'm convinced, as I hope you are, that this form of ours, conservative Judaism, is going to survive and thrive because it's needed, because its message is right, because nobody else can offer this balance of full engagement in the texts and traditions and practices of the Jewish past at the same time as we have full engagement without hanging back in society and culture around us. It's a formula that is the right formula. And if we get the message right and get the quality more uniformly high and get our structures in order so we have institutional vessels worthy of our commitment, then I think we are absolutely fine. What I want to speak about this morning is on the meaning side of the meaning and community pair that I think is mainly what we offer to American Jews, meaning and community. In my text study session later on, I'll be talking about community. But right now, I want to talk about meaning, and I want to approach the question of meaning through Vayikra. Now, this on the face of it is a strange choice, because Vayikra is, I think, the most inaccessible to many people book of the five books of the Torah. It's not immediately obvious to most contemporary Jews why they should care a great deal about priests and blood and hierarchy and sacrifice and running sores and lesions and stuff that seems like mold in walls and tzarat and fabrics, etc., etc. It seems so arcane and esoteric and sometimes repellent. And sometimes I think that Vayikra's standing at the middle of the Torah is a symbol of the fact that you kind of have to peel away more accessible parts of the Torah like Bereshit or Dvarim to get to this middle where Vayikra lives. And yet, Vayikra lives in a very adult way where we do. Vayikra doesn't live at the moments of peak experience like Sinai and Exodus. It lives at those moments of getting the kids off to school and paying the mortgage and managing your workplace and making your marriage as good as it can be and caring about your friends and being present for them, etc., etc., etc. It deals with this stuff of ordinary life that can either drag you down or can raise you up to sanctification, to holiness. And this book holds out the promise that this ordinary stuff where we actually live and these ordinary people who live it are people who care about one another, are capable of love, and therefore are capable of great acts of nobility, and can make this daily life which we live, this stuff of life, truly worthy of the presence of God in our lives. I think that young people have a hard time with the presence of death all over Vayikra, and not just young people. And I think that young people have a lot of curiosity, and adults do too, because of our stereotypical notions of religion, about the focus on sexuality that happens all over Vayikra. And it seems to me that this is a pair, and not just because, you know, Woody Allen will tell you, if you don't know already, that the aim of therapy is to deal with sex and death. Well, yeah, because that's the real stuff of human life. And you can either repress it and try to keep it down, and you can let it conquer you and drag you down, or you can contain it and raise it up and sanctify it and make it part of a life that is ordered and beautiful and profound, and so that when you confront these out of control things, or when you confront these boundary moments, you can say, it's okay. Nonetheless, life is good. I don't have what I need to, but I have enough to go on. And this is a very kind of mature religion we've got here. It's the same kind of mature religion that Deuteronomy proclaims at the end of Devarim, when it tells us that the things we really want to know, like, why is all this happening? Why this tsunami? Why these deaths of cancer? Why all this stuff? And you don't know, and you want to hold up your hand to say you don't know. And Deuteronomy reminds you that the secret things belong to God, but the revealed things are for us to do for now and forever. And so we have enough to go on in both senses of go on. And you get, once you're inside of this book and appreciate what it's all about and get inside the symbol system, perhaps with the help of the classical commentators, but also with the help of anthropology, as Jacob Milgram uses anthropology to help get inside Vayikra, you find out that this symbol system is one that really has to do with us in our everyday lives and can be a source of great inspiration and comfort. I find it magnificent what happens in Shmini when this fire goes forth from before the Lord and eats those sacrifices. And then, a minute later, when the fire goes forth before the Lord and the same word eats those two sons of Aaron. And then we spend the rest of that chapter, the middle chapter of Shmini, talking about what the priests are and are not going to eat. And we spend the last chapter of the portion talking in great detail about what Israelites can and cannot eat. And this most primal act of a human being, this act which links us to animals, but is raised up by holy order to something human and beyond human, to an object of divine concern, this connection between us and the animals via eating is really made holy in this book. And that's profound. And when you have to stare down the death of the two sons of Aaron, this is also profound. And I guess my favorite two words in this parsha of last week, and one of my two favorite words in the entire Torah for which I give thanks, are Vayidom Aharon. Rejects all sorts of explanations. Like we know, some religious leaders in this world are going to give about that tsunami, these so-called friends of Job. Boy, Japanese, you must have screwed up really badly to merit such punishment from heaven. Come on, this is obscene. And Leviticus announces it is obscene and throws its hands up and says, we are not going to master this. We're not going to hold God or God's ways in our hand for all to see, but we have enough to go on. This can be an order of meaning, an order of beauty. And the point of this exercise is, of course, Leman Tifyu, all over the Torah. We live Acharei Mot, we live Lifnei Mot, and we don't surrender to that Mavet. We put ourselves inside an order of sanctification, which enables us to choose life and make life good and tell our children that life is good. This coming week, it strikes me, every time when I look at Tazria or Metzora, what these priests can and cannot do. They can describe and they can pronounce holy and profane, but they cannot cure. There's no primitive medicine going on here. There's no magic. There's no abracadabra to take away the impurity. There's an attempt, for whatever reason, to use this particular disease, as opposed to all others, as a metaphor for the system of purity and impurity that enables Israel to be sanctified. And if you follow Milgram's commentary through its peregrinations in this long three volumes of his, you find out that this is about restoring a self to wholeness, to family, to community. This order of meaning is an order of being in which we are encased, in which we hold out, we priests, we custodians of Torah, hold out to those to come to us in search of meaning. I had the privilege of listening to our students when they do CPE training at JTS talk about their experiences in CPE training, these students who, as your medical students, no doubt, are full of doubt about whether they have chosen the right path, whether they're really worthy of it, whether they can do good. And then they have an experience in an internship in CPE, which they tell you time after time is the most meaningful of their training, one of the most meaningful moments of their lives, because they see themselves making a difference to people, not by curing, but by helping in this effort of sanctification and meaning. So I will never forget, and will now share with you, the words of one of our students who said that on her first day at the job, she finds herself in a hospital talking to a man who's about to undergo life-threatening surgery and doesn't know if he's going to come out the other end alive. And she's, of course, terrified. He's terrified. But she's been trained well. And so she says to him at a moment of quiet, "What would you want to say to God if God were here with us right now?" And he said, "God is here with us right now. God walked in the door with you." And yeah, exactly. And that's a heavy load to carry, but it's also an incredible gift. I myself, a non-rabbi long before chancellorship, when I was a professor at Stanford, got a little taste of what Ezekiel was talking about with holy water in this week's Haftarah, when I found myself on an airplane from San Jose to Los Angeles, sitting side by side with a woman, a Latina, a woman in front of me, who was obviously her mother, and across the aisle, a woman who seemed to be her sister. And they were going to Los Angeles, and she saw me reading something in Hebrew, and she said, "Are you a rabbi?" I said, "No, but I'm a scholar of Judaism. Is there something I can tell you?" And she said, "Yes, we're going to Los Angeles to the Kabbalah Center because we need to get some holy water." And I said, "Why? How do you know about this?" And she said, holding up an issue of People magazine about the Kabbalah Center, "Because they have holy water there and we need it. And besides, I have to go talk to Eitan Fishbane." And I said, who was then a professor at HUC, and I said, "He's a friend of mine. How do you know Eitan Fishbane?" And she holds up the People magazine article where he's quoted Professor Eitan Fishbane of Hebrew Union College, Los Angeles. And I said, "As a matter of fact, I happen to know he's in Carleton College on sabbatical this year and you can't go see him, but why do you want the holy water?" And then the story gradually comes out that they're Catholics and their priests will not give them the time of day because in defiance of the church, they cremated their father. And they're feeling terribly guilty about this act. They need to be cleansed. And so they're going to the Kabbalah Center to have holy water. And then in one of those moments that you can't make up, but which teaches me a lot about what you do every day as rabbis, I'm going down the jetway. I must be 10 feet ahead of her, outside the plane already. And she calls out after me, "Is my father with God?" And I said, "Yes, I'm sure your father is with God." We are part of an order of meaning, you and I. And it's our ability, it's our gift to confer this meaning. And in saying this, I don't intend to make a chiddush here, I intend to do chizuk here. I intend to make the point that one of our most important functions, which we, alas, sometimes forget about it because our congregants often will not admit that that is why they are there and that they need this, we are people who convey to them the assurance that in being Jews, we are bound up in an order of meaning that is larger than ourselves. It goes back to Sinai. Its vehicle is Torah. It's found in community. And that's what we are here to do. And dafka, because we are frail and get sick and are mortal and are sometimes self-destructive and are often self-deceived, we need this Torah, and this Torah addresses us and has the possibility of raising us higher. And I see conservative Judaism as able to convey this in a special way for two or three reasons, in large part via its rabbis. And I'll give these reasons and then wrap up. Number one, because we want to be whole. We want to be whole. Holiness is connected to wholeness. We can't be whole if we are left out because of our gender or our sexual orientation or because of what we know and don't know, what we practice and don't practice. This is a tradition of ours, conservative Judaism, which I think in the spirit of b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol me'odecha, puts the emphasis on the chol and says that every single one of us is required for this effort of making the world better and making our communities better and making ourselves holy, and every single part of every one of us, heart and soul and might and mind and arts and sciences and professions and parenting, all of this is required, and we put this on offer, I believe, in a way in keeping with Jewish tradition, in a way that no other movement can. But there's a second piece, and forgive me, it has come to light in teaching the class that I'm teaching this semester on conservative Judaism. I'm just going to beg your indulgence for reflecting for a minute on this history of ours in conservative Judaism. And one often has a certain dissatisfaction with the founders, let's be honest, with Frankel and even with Schechter and Adler up to Finkelstein, because they seem to avert intentionally the question of ultimate meaning. They're just not comfortable making truth claims. They don't talk about God a whole lot. They don't say what they believe, how this text came to be sacred. And if you're a young rabbinical student looking into your tradition, sometimes the founders can be frustrating. But we've had a lot of time since then to work on this. And I want to suggest that one of the things Frankel did by putting the emphasis on the positive and the historical was assist us in this search for wholeness. In other words, as the Christians well knew when they campaigned against carnal Israel, the very peoplehood of Israel is connected to our bodies. That this is not an ethereal tradition, and conservative Judaism reacted against a turn toward the ethereal in Judaism, reacted against that turn toward the ethereal and the reduction of Judaism to the theme of ethical monotheism by insisting upon the Jewish body in the singular and the Jewish body in the collective, that we are real people with a history and a language and a land and a hope for Mashiach, and all of that is part of us because of Leviticus. And I think that Frankel, for all of his avoidance of theological issues directly, was indirectly doing us a big favor in helping contemporary Jews to confront issues of meaning by putting this emphasis on body. It helps. It's necessary. It's essential. I know that we're often preoccupied with membership dues and structure and paying the rent. This is body too. This is very Levitical. And our parishioners, if we can call them that, the Jews in the pews, are, like us, not often good at confessing what's really disturbing them. We learned from Buber that to be a good listener means not just to listen to what's said to you, but to listen to what's not said to you. And what's not said to you is often the most important stuff. I think that this is a moment of great potential for our movement, because we have a message that can be incarnated in communities and can make Jewish bodies and souls and minds and hearts whole. And with that kind of message and that kind of ability, if we can do the work that's worthy of the gift that we are carrying, no one need worry for a minute about the future of conservative Judaism. Thank you very much.